Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 82. My name is John. Has our conscience shown? Has the sweet breeze blown? Has all kindness gone? Hope still lingers on. This podcast is a little bit different. Let me give you a quick backstory, or as quick as my loquaciousness allows. My girlfriend, well, ex-girlfriend now, works for a non-profit organization. She asked me to listen to a TED talk from one of her heroes named Dan Pallotta. She was taking part in a contest with other employees of the nonprofit that whoever could get the most people to participate in a survey after listening to the speech would get to have a 30-minute interview/conversation with Mr. Pallotta. Well, this is one of her heroes, so of course I agreed. Of course, she won. And of course, a month later she gave me the I need some time to myself speech, but that's another story. I had a pretty scathing survey response. The whole talk was about rethinking the way we look at charity. I'm not big on nonprofits to begin with, but not for the reasons you may think, and I'll get into that a little bit more later in the podcast. So I kind of half-heartedly listened to the speech, rolling my eyes while waiting to get to the end so I could do the survey and get this thing over with. A couple of months later, after my girlfriend had already broken things off, I get an email from a representative of Dan Pallotta stating that he appreciated my candid response even though I disagreed. Just for the hell of it, I replied and offered a more detailed critique. To my surprise, the representative agreed. So I went back and listened to the speech again, but this time I didn't have any distractions around me. I did one other thing differently, and this is something that I advise people to do, so I thought it would be a good idea if I practice what I preach. I listened with the mindset that the speaker is correct, so as not to put up walls. And after listening, I started to agree a little bit more with what he said, though not entirely. I kept my response to the representative brief because I'm sure he didn't need a 30-minute dissertation, but there was so much that I decided to turn it into a podcast. So, here's the deal. I will try to explain Dan Pallotta's points as I discuss them in this podcast, but if you want a thorough understanding, you can click the link to the speech on my website or search Google for Dan Pallotta, Rethinking Charity, TED Talk. Pallotta is spelled P as in Papa, A-L-L-O-T-T as in Tango, A. I'm going to start with the things I disagree with because, if you listen to this podcast long enough, you realize I prefer to end on a positive note whenever possible. Let me get this one out of the way first. Dan thinks the relatively small percentage that people give to charity or nonprofits can be traced back to the early European settlers. These were Calvinists, with a belief system that simultaneously demanded profitable work, yet condemned profit. So they had a system of giving 5% to charity as penance. So you're blaming Calvinists for the problems with giving in modern America? This is a small sect in the Christian religion. They may have been prevalent way back then, but there is no reason to think they've had any kind of legacy influence on American society for generations now. I think there's a different kind of faith at work in America, keeping people from giving to charities, but I'll hold that for later. The other problem is, if you're trying to persuade people the benefits of giving more in your system, you probably shouldn't sound like you're blaming the problem on people who are predisposed to giving. Because I don't know about you, somebody out on the street will hear that speech and they will hear Calvinists, but they will think Christianity in general. But that's just my opinion. Dan, like most people, is worried about those who are left behind in the economy, about 10%. That is where charity, also known as nonprofits, needs to come in to help. I've said this many times before. Some will always be left behind. That's not a cynical point of view, that is a pragmatic point of view. No form of government, no type of economy can change that. Because every form of government and every type of economy has tried and ended up with the same problems. Human beings run every form of government and every economy, and they will always fail someone in their plans. I would dare say that charities, despite their best efforts, will always fail about 10% of the people they seek to help. Why? Same reason. But don't discount the fact that there are some out there who simply do not want to be helped. If your heart is set on saving everyone, you're gonna be disappointed. And if you tell everyone you will save all those left behind, you set yourself up for failure. That's not to say don't have the love in your heart to try. But you have to have acceptance when you fall short of an impossible goal. By the way, charities, please, don't promise to end hunger. Don't promise to end a disease. When I hear that, the pragmatist inside of me winces. If you achieve your goal, strut your stuff. But until then, you're just making overzealous promises. I don't know about anybody else, but just give me an earnest promise to fight and to work to try to make things better. That is a promise I can believe in. Dan talked about the advertising dollars spent by businesses and that they, quote, spin on advertising until the last dollar no longer produces a penny of value, end quote. Now, I understand what he means because I'm kind of sick of advertising and I think it's overdone anyway. But no business that deserves to be in business would ever spin on advertising until the last dollar no longer produces a penny of value. Now, I'm sure there are some who do, and I hope those go out of business, because that's just foolish. Advertising in the for-profit sector is not always effective, and poor advertising can wreck a company. Like many things in our modern world, some people, like advertisers, think the tried and true way of doing things are still the best. Again, I don't know about you, but when you get that big envelope of Valpak coupons that comes in the mail, I can guarantee you in our household, 98% of it is automatically going in the trash. The only thing in that Valpak that comes to us each month that does not go into the trash is the coupon for the really good Tex-Mex restaurant that we like to eat at anyway. The only way any coupon from that envelope gets saved otherwise is if there is a magical combination of a service we need without a lead already on a good provider. So in other words, never. Why do we have a DVR or Netflix? So we can skip the goddamn commercials. Hell, even on my phone, I have an app to play solitaire. Before I can start a game, I have to sit through an advertisement. I make a mental note to not buy any product that pops up there because it keeps me from what I really want to do. See, advertising is not always effective, and pummeling people with the same ad nonstop doesn't always work. I rarely visit two websites, Newsarama and Comic Book Resources. I used to go on them every day at least once, but I don't do it anymore because both are so grossly overrun with ads that it takes too long for a page to load. And in this day and age, 5 seconds is too long. ESPN makes you watch a 30-second commercial before you can watch a 30-second sports highlight clip. Why bother? I just turn off the autoplay function and read the article. I don't need to see the frickin' highlight. Fuck advertisements. They're annoying. We're inundated with them. So no, a company may spin on advertising, but if they do, they're morons because they don't understand the law of diminishing returns. We live in a society that expects things to be done, but they are willing to give a pass to an occasional failure. So Dan gave a couple of examples. One was about Disney being forgiven for a $200 million flop. The other about investors being okay with Amazon having 6 down years. Now, Disney can have a flop because they can afford to have a flop. And their reputation is, for every flop, you're going to have at least 9 hits. So, of course, people will forgive a $200 million failure if the same company can cite $2 billion in successes. But when you have a movie company, or a producer, or a director, or even an actor with several failures in a row, people lose their jobs. Now, Amazon is not, in reality, a good example to cite either. If a business is not living up to its potential, why should people invest in them? If charities are not accomplishing their stated goal, why give to them? I mentioned that because the investors had patience because Amazon had a track record of profit and believed it would turn around. Why they believe that, I have no idea. The 6 down years comment took me by surprise, so I looked into it. Amazon has had about 20 years of less than optimal returns. Even a cursory examination of their economic history would scare away most savvy investors, and even some complete novices like me. So, that's not the best example for Dan to use, because a company that has a long history of less than adequate profit really should not have people investing in them. If that's the case, then a nonprofit, which consistently fails in its stated goals, shouldn't have people donating money to them either. 90% of all new businesses fail. Any new idea, if it doesn't produce immediately, is almost always doomed. Not every product can be Gorilla Glass. You have to have people believe in the idea in order to give up some of their work and risk for your cause. But I can hear the seeds of a good idea in his speech. There was one quote that, when he said it, I think that's when I really started to want to find a way to help his idea succeed. He said, "When you prohibit failure, you kill innovation." Ah, now you're talking my language. As a libertarian and true capitalist, I have been shouting a message similar to that for nearly 7 years. He puts forth the idea of philanthropy as a market, just like there is a market for, say, milk. There are people out there who need charity, and philanthropists are his entrepreneurs. His concern is there are two different rule books, one for the for-profit entities and one for the non-profit entities. He is absolutely correct. But that's because non-profits, by their own admission, play by different rules. You see, if you want to reap the benefits enjoyed by the for-profit businesses, then you have to play by the rules of a for-profit business. As I listened to his speech, I kept thinking, nonprofit needs a rebranding. They are their own worst enemy. By its very name, nonprofits give the air of, we don't care about money. It comes off as pretentious and supercilious. Love that word. I visited Oregon last year, and one of my favorite things to do on vacation is to visit local restaurants and breweries. One particular brewery touted themselves as the world's only nonprofit brewery. I remember that because they don't let you forget it. They remind you about it in everything they do. So, how was this brewery? Well, everything in the place was stripped down to the bare essentials. Why? Because if they have less overhead, then they have more money to give away. They wouldn't close the windows and turn on the air conditioning, despite the fact that they were having an abnormal, record-breaking heat wave. Why? Because every penny they don't spend on electricity, they can give away. The waiter, I think, was one of the brewers. I'm pretty sure he had no experience and no idea on how to wait tables, because I got almost no help from him on questions about the menu, or, ironically, on questions about the various brews on their list. Why? I don't know. Maybe because hiring an experienced wait staff would increase their overhead too much. I had a beer and some bacon, and I left. I would have stayed there longer and may have spent more money if the chairs had been comfortable, and I didn't have sweat dripping down my back, or if the waiter had given me any help with the menu. To me, this is exactly the problem Dan talks about in his speech about nonprofits not investing in overhead in order to generate more donations in the long run. And that problem exists in part because that is how nonprofits present themselves to the rest of society. There's this arrogant attitude that, oh, all you gotta do is give us just a few dollars and we're gonna stretch that out and we're gonna work miracles with it. Now, we can debate why that is, but I think it's because nearly every single person in society has a misunderstanding about money. Now, obviously this doesn't apply to the Federal Reserve, but money is the physical, or these days electric, representation of your work and your risk. When you ask people for money, whether it be for goods and services as a for-profit organization, or charity as a non-profit organization, you are asking people to give up some of their work and their risk for your product. Moreover, if you are a nonprofit and you hire someone because of the nature of your business and the way you present yourself to society, you are asking them to provide work for an entity that gives off the vibe that they don't care about money for themselves, but rather only for their cause. And every possible penny has to go to the cause. But, obviously, nonprofits do care about money. And, whether they realize it or not, they do care about making a profit, which is the most important reason the phrase nonprofit just needs to go. Dan talked about increasing the overhead of a charity via hiring administrators at a for-profit market level instead of the bare-bones pay they get now, and increased advertising to tout the success stories of the charity. And by doing so, he believes the investment will pay off with far greater donations from the public than are currently received using the current cut corners in every way possible business model that the nonprofits use. So, invest in the cause in the hopes of a greater influx of revenue. That's profit. Put the money to advertising to show the people what good has been done and can be done in order to get more revenue into the charity than you would have had without the advertising. That's profit. Investing in a brilliant mind at for-profit market value in order to bring in more revenue. Profit. That's the for-profit, dare I say, capitalist system you're proposing as a model for charity. Whether he intended it or not, he's talking about using capitalist principles for nonprofit organizations. Real capitalist principles, not the oxymoronic crony capitalism that is taught and practiced. That doesn't diminish the cause. That shows you aren't willing to follow the typical practice that throws money at a problem in the name of charity, hoping that some resolution miraculously appears. Many years ago, and longtime listeners of this podcast might still remember this, many years ago there was a government PSA with Ashley Judd talking about how noble it would be for some theoretical person that's currently going to a job interview that would make $250,000 a year to instead go to another country and volunteer there to make the world a better place. I think I still have the audio somewhere because I promise you, you can hear the condescension in her voice when she talks about landing the big paying job. This coming from an actress who, at the time, could have done 2 months of work for a few million dollars. Remember what I said earlier about movie stars who have a string of failures will eventually not be able to find work? For that matter, why can't I stop picking on Ashley Judd whenever she comes up in this podcast? I mean, I used to adore her. Regardless, that's the attitude some people have. The rich and or talented people should sacrifice nearly everything they have for what is supposedly the greater good. This is the exact opposite of Dan's speech. Pay the big bucks to that person to come work for the charity, then let that talented mind do more for the cause and get compensated properly for the labor. And this gets to the point of what is really damaging charities. It's not religion. It's not the rich. What I really loved about Dan's speech in my second go-around is the notion that a person who cures a disease like malaria should not be maligned if they earn $500,000 for finding the cure. Hell, I would be fine with a far greater amount than that. If you, as an individual, or as a business, find a cure for a disease, you are expected, in the current climate of our society, to give it to the world as a gift. You could have worked tirelessly for 50 years and sacrificed every penny you have in order to fund your research and find the cure. And there are many in our society who would say, tough shit, give us the pill. And if you don't give it to them, they will find a way to force it from you via the government. And you'll likely be maligned in every media outlet possible. I've often argued, when people complain about the cost of healthcare, that if you had the person you loved more than anything or anyone else in the world on an operating table, and the only person in the world who could save your loved one's life walked in the door, what would you give that doctor to save your loved one? I don't know about you, but my answer is everything I have. The person who cures cancer or AIDS or heart disease or who somehow finds a way to end homelessness should be bestowed with whatever treasures they can get. I don't care how much it is, because they would rightfully deserve it. But that's not allowed in our society. It is expected to be given away or for someone else to pay for it. It is expected that all of society pool their monies together and have their resources doled out, supposedly, to those in need. But we all know that's not the reality. Why do things remain the way they are? Well, since Dan uses the examples of cancer and homelessness, let me address those, because the template can be applied to others. There is a, well, let's call it a theory, that homelessness remains because politicians can use them to gain and retain power. That's not really hard to believe, now is it? Especially when those politicians who get their votes, in part, from showing their compassion towards helping the homeless are the same politicians who use police to force the homeless away from their political meetings and conventions. If someone does end homelessness, how would the politicians show their compassion by giving them the dignity of a shopping cart or clean needles to do drugs? So politicians do just enough to sustain homelessness at a level for the people to see the need to spend the tax dollars on the problem, but not make it a big enough problem for people to fear the situation and want to evoke real change. Cynical, you say? Pragmatic. There's also a terrifying thought floating around that there are cures for cancer already. But since there is more money to be made in research than there is to curing the disease, those theoretical cures are hidden away. I don't want to believe that. I want to think that there is benevolence. But then I think, what of the person who cures the disease? You see, a century ago, individuals, inventors, labored away looking for the next invention to A, benefit mankind, and B, make the inventor stinking rich. These days, the individual inventor is depicted as a quasi-crackpot making some ultimately useless tool in the garage while the spouse stands in the doorway rolling his or her eyes. Government and corporations have been steadily eating up resources and luring the best brains into their web with the promise of a steady income. In return, if that brain invents something astounding to change mankind, they get a pat on the back and maybe a nice gift certificate from their government/corporate employer, while the wealth gained from the invention funnels to the politicians and or board of directors. Where, then, is the incentive? And to top it all off, this political system that purports to care, but is really just using us for its own selfish gain, gives people the impression that they don't need to do anything. Just let the system take care of you. So why give charity? Why give to some cause when the corporate or government entities have already promised they're taking care of it? Why should I have to pay for my health care? Let somebody else do it. Why should I give to charity? Government's going to take care of us all from cradle to grave. The great, innovative, and risky ideas of the individual have given way to the safe, controlled ideas of collectivist government and corporations. It's no wonder entities like nonprofits have become stagnant when that has become the mindset of the nation. I like Dan Pallotta's idea better, in principle. I may disagree with some of the logic he uses to get to his point, but it's an idea I believe deserves a chance. It's more common sense than the way charities are run now. Plus, taking that big of a risk puts all eyes on the charity that tries it. I'd be far less concerned about corruption in a charity that was under that kind of microscope. So, if you haven't already, give him a listen. If you think his idea has merit, give him a shout out. Given what our society has become and is becoming, a radical look at how we run charities may be just another piece of the puzzle to turning this world around. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.